podcast.
I am extremely fragile right now.
Today we're talking about the game starring Michael Douglas, Sean Penn, Deborah Kara Unger, James Reborn, Peter Dunnett, and Anna Katharina, directed by David Fincher. I am Ryan, one of your hosts here on the Cinema Talk podcast.
I'm Brendan, one of your hosts here on the Cinema Talk podcast.
I'm Matthew.
And I'm Logan. I show up and watch movies.
There you go. And we are back for episode 2/3, depending on the way you look at it, on our David Fincher series with his third feature film, The Game. So I don't know about you guys, but I had never seen this movie before. So real quick, of y'all's background with The Game.
I didn't have a background with it. I think I can just leave it at that. I had heard of it since you mentioned it. But I had literally funny because I told my dad that I was watching this movie and he was like, I saw that in theaters. And I was like, cool, Dad. And he watched the movie with me at home.
That's wholesome.
That was the only connection that I had to it. And he was like, I remember this. And I was like, cool. I am glad that you remember a movie that you saw in 1997.
Nice. Yeah, I knew of its existence. I knew that it was on Criterion Collection, and I knew that it was one of Brie Larson's favorite movies. But other than that, that was about all I knew.
Yeah, I also totally knew nothing going in.
Yeah, all I knew about this movie was that it's the forgotten David Fincher movie between Seven and Fight Club. And we'll talk about whether or not that's warranted. But yeah, this was one of the few Fincher films that I had actually never seen before. So didn't even know. All I knew about it was the poster with Michael Douglas on it. Like, that's it. So, I guess.
Yeah, just even before we get started with anything about this movie, there is a connection between this movie and another film that we've reviewed on this podcast. One of the names that you mentioned was Peter Donat.
Okay.
And he is the nephew of Robert Donat, who is in the 39 Steps.
I wondered that.
Oh.
Nice. Yep.
I saw that name and I was like, nah, it's no way. I'm not even going to look it up.
Yes. Well, I looked it up.
So, because
I'm willing to look up
lawyer.
Anything.
How astudious of you, Logan.
Mm-hmm. Glad you enjoy it.
Excellent. Well, we're going to go into, as usual, the shortened plot summary, and then we'll go into the game. Nicholas Van Orton is a very wealthy San Francisco banker, but he is also an absolute loner, even spending his birthday alone. In the year of his 48th birthday, the age his father committed suicide, his brother Conrad, who has gone long ago and surrendered to addictions of all kinds, suddenly returns and gives Nicholas a card giving him entry to an unusual entertainment provided by something called Consumer Recreation Services, CRS. Giving in to curiosity, Nicholas visits CRS, and all kinds of weird and bad things start to happen to him. And that is the basic premise of The Game. So guys, tell me, what were your initial thoughts on David Fincher's third film?
I gotta say, I am still processing this movie, even after I saw it. Because just like, you know, thought immediately right out the gate, there was this massive sense of like catharsis at the end of the movie for me, where like everything fell into place. And like, I understood, you know, when it got to the end, like how, like the lengths to which this game went. And I was just like, man, wow, that was really interesting. But you know, I've been like mulling it over in my head and thinking about like the logistics of it and how like some of the things just don't really make sense. But I'm sure we'll get into that, but that's pretty much my initial thoughts with this movie.
I do not know how to rate this movie because I like Brendan, I am baffled by this movie, and just when the credits rolled at the end, I just did not know what to think. I really, really enjoyed, I guess, 95% of this movie. And then once we get to the end there, once he jumps off the building, I don't know what the hell happened. I felt such a disconnect at the end towards what they were portraying on screen, what they were, you know, in, like what I should be feeling and what I was actually feeling. I was just completely baffled by it. So I really going to be intrigued by this conversation and where it goes, because I don't know where my rating is going to lie. Because as I stand now, you know, my initial reaction is I like most of the movie. I really dislike the ending. I think it's botched. But for some reason, like, it doesn't really ruin the rest of the movie for me. I don't know. Like, I left the movie more intrigued than angered by the ending, even though I really did dislike it. I don't know. It's just this film has a very weird quality to it, a very like dreamlike, trance-like quality to it that I can't quite put my finger on. Mm.
I think this is going to be a super interesting episode because I have almost like the exact same experience. Some parts of this movie are A+ and some parts of this movie are F. And what combination of those it's going to be is going to be really interesting to see, I think, throughout the course of this episode. Normally on this podcast, and I think it's probably the same for you guys. I know I've talked to Floyd about this and we both sort of do it this way, but we have like maybe two or three ratings that we're going between. And then like, you know, based on if we say a lot of positive stuff, a lot of negative stuff on the movie, you know, maybe we're going to give it a B, maybe we're going to give it a B+. Just depends on kind of how the podcast goes. And for this one, I have no idea what like my range is. Like, I have no clue. So this should be interesting. This is definitely going to be really interesting. Because I have strong opinions on almost everything. Some of it's really good, some of it's really bad. So yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, this is one of the first podcasts that going in, I was like, huh. I'm normally a very opinionated person when I see a movie, but I was like, I'm kind of benevolent toward this movie. Like, I don't know. Like, I think I don't like the ending, but I'm not sure. Like, we'll get into it. I definitely think that it was at least botched in terms of tone, but, I mean, we'll get there. But there are things about this movie that I definitely like, and there's things about this movie that I definitely dislike. But then the ending just makes everything just, like, feel so out of whack. Like, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about this movie. I'm excited to talk through it. It'll be, like, all of us laying down on a couch trying to figure out our problems together, except it's going to be about a movie.
We should have all laid down before this episode started and tried to just take a moment. A
couple deep breaths. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. But, you know, let's start at the beginning. We start with Michael
Douglas.
A very
good place to start.
Huh?
Thank you, Logan.
I said a very good place to start.
Excellent choice for the start by me. You're welcome. But yeah, let's start with Michael Douglas. You know, he's just a normal, not Wall Street, but I guess like kind of feels like the equivalent of a Wall Street asshole. Banker in San Francisco. Just, you know, kind of a cliche. Just like, oh, I'm the divorced guy in my 40s that's a banker and rich and just lives alone in a house with a maid. Like, I don't know. I kind of liked the setup of this movie. I think Michael Douglas does good things with this role, but it does feel like a lot of cliches here at the beginning before Conrad shows up.
Skip over the very beginning of the movie, which is we see kind of old film footage of Michael Douglas when he's young, and I'm assuming Sean Penn too, you know, those characters along with the dad.
Did you know that dad is played by the guy who does the voice of Mario?
What the fuck?
I forget his name, but he does the voice of Mario, Luigi, Wario, and Waluigi. And I was like, wah! Jumped off the building.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, we see him, the suicide, and I really did like this initial beginning. I do think they milk it with this like old film footage, and at a certain point in the movie it feels a little emotionally manipulative, but I did like the really like dreamlike tone it created. I don't know, I really dug that vibe.
Yeah, I've heard some really interesting things said about the way that these flashbacks, because these are obviously not home movies, you know, some of this intro you could believe it's a home movie, but why would they be filming the father's suicide? So like, they're obviously not all home movies. But I think it's really interesting that, you know, when the flashback device was sort of started to be a thing, it wasn't really very common to have, like home videos be a thing. So it was just kind of like you're thinking about what happened and the flashback looks exactly the same. But now we have flashbacks in our everyday life, and they are like old videos and old pictures and that kind of thing. And I think the home movie format is a really interesting way to explain that, like, just before 2000, it's like sort of a, I don't know, I like the effect that that gave. And even if it's not a home movie, it sort of dates it in that era.
And also that he's envisioning his past and his father's suicide as a film, you know?
Yeah.
And the game in this movie can't be interpreted as like, oh, you know, this meta version of a movie set of a film. So it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it definitely felt that way at some points with the way the game was being played. It was like, this kind of feels like a movie, But
yeah,
maybe that's what Fincher was going for with a lot of the way he set things up. But I don't know.
I mean, I'm sure that, like, in terms of seeing the father's death and, like, how personal they got with some of the, like, details of the game later on, I mean, some of that could even be interpreted, like, yes, he remembers it as this, like, home movie, but, like, they obviously, his younger brother is in on it, and which mm-hmm. we find out at the end of the movie, and so, like, you know, the details that he remembers were probably very similar to the ones that his younger brother remembers, albeit he was a baby, but he probably has somewhat similar memories. I think that you could interpret that as, like, part of the, like, data that they collected and incorporated into his game.
Yeah, I know. I could definitely see that. I mean, they did a psych test on him, so I think right. that they at least got some of that kind of stuff on him. But, so...
I feel guilty when I masturbate.
Yeah, that was an interesting scene, but...
What did he say?
So, yeah, I do like that old flashbacks, whatever. I kind of forgot about there for a sec, but yeah. How do you guys feel about Michael Douglas's character as a whole? Do you think that he works as the protagonist, especially here at the beginning? Like, do you get tired of watching him when he's just being this asshole to people, especially to servers? He's an asshole to a lot of servers in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, on the whole, he is certainly uncompelling at the beginning. You know, he's just kind of a stick in the mud and just kind of this, like, even though that we, I feel like possibly relating that pain at the very beginning is supposed to humanize him a little bit, even as he is being an asshole for, like, the first how much of this movie. I will say, there gets to be a point when I'm like, this is getting old. Like, you're not even, like, an entertaining asshole. You're yeah. just kind of, like, a jerk, and you probably are, like, I don't know. It just the kind of person that, like, I lost my train of thought there, but essentially, like, it got old after a while, trying to watch him do the same things and treat people poorly over and over again. And there was, like, a point in the movie when I was like, can he just stop?
Yeah, the problem for me was that he wasn't big enough of an asshole for the catharsis at the end to feel cathartic.
Yeah.
Like he was rude. He was rude in the restaurant. He was very rude to his fellow workers. And, you know, with his wife, I guess the implication is that she left him because he was rude or something, or he says that she left him. Like maybe she cheated on him. I don't know. But, like, I don't think they go far enough in making him into an asshole. Like, I guess this would have been even more cliche, but maybe if he would have cheated on his wife, or if we would have at least known more about that, because I never like vehemently hated him in the beginning or felt like yeah. he needed his comeuppance at all. So the whole film, you know, the whole cathartic at the end just did not work for me.
Right. I mean, like, at some points, like, he's kind of a dick, but, like, he's not, like, extremely rude, so I feel like there's no real place for his arc to go. And also, just, like, it's Michael Douglas. Like, I'm not gonna hate a character played by Michael Douglas, you know? He's Hank Pym. How can I hate Hank Pym? I was gonna say. So, like, I kind of liked him. I liked his character. I thought he was a little bit, you know, mostly I just felt bad for him because he had a sad... He had a very sad life. Like, he's very rich. We hear what's his net worth, like $600 million yeah. or something. But, like, he is super lonely. Like, when he goes back to his mansion for the first time and he's, like, eating dinner alone and he has, like that's one of the...
On his birthday.
It's just, like, it's so sad.
It is sad.
And he has his one cupcake that he, like, yeah. sadly yeah. takes out of, like, a glass, like, bell jar.
Yeah, that's sad. And, like, that makes you feel bad for him. So I never... I don't know. I definitely didn't think of him as, like, the villain. And, like, partway through the movie when I started to think, like, wait, maybe he's supposed to be, like, the bad guy? Like, because he's rich, we're not supposed to root for him? But then the thing is, he's being, like, attacked the whole time by, or, you know, like, psychologically tortured the entire time by an enormous corporation. So it's not even, like,
it's not a clean Robin metaphor. Hood
story. Yeah. It's not even, like, a Robin Hood story of, like, he's getting what he had coming, but, like, it's, like, an enormous company that's stealing his money, so it just, like, it didn't work. Like, I still felt like he was who we were supposed to be rooting for.
that's kind of interesting, is that, like, he is just this, like, rich white dude. And, I mean, I'm sure the connotation was, like, different in 1997 or whatever, but he's very much just like, oh, this is what rich white people do when they're bored. It's they hire massive corporations to psychologically torture them. Apparently.
Dude, sometimes there is run someone told me about money and you just want to be psychologically tortured into suicide.
Yeah, someone exactly. told me about a service a little while ago, and I have no idea if this is real, but apparently you can, like, sign up to get kidnapped, and you like sign a form.
Yeah, I've heard of those.
And then, like, years later, like, after you forget about it, they kidnap you, and then they're like, surprise, you wanted this.
Yeah, there's a documentary about that. It's like,
what the fuck?
Really?
Scary, like, real life horror type things for
it's so weird.
Masochists.
Surprise, yeah. You wanted this.
But I think, and this doesn't really apply to us since none of us have seen this movie, myself included, but I think they were trying to go off of Michael Douglas's role in Wall Street, which was, like, a famous movie from 1987 where he played Gordon Gekko, who was, like, this infamous, like Wall Street asshole. So I think they were, like, trying to build off of that persona that he had as an actor of playing those types of roles. So maybe it worked a little better in that time, but I still agree. I still don't think it really comes through that well.
Yeah, I got to agree with you, Matt, that he just wasn't quite enough of an asshole for the ending to pack a punch. Like, I felt bad for him at first when he jumped off that building. I was like, Jesus Christ, this is a fucking dark ending, that this whole movie was just someone leading to someone's suicide. And then, like, I don't know, I mean, we'll get to the ending when we get there, but, like, as a character, like, I never liked him enough to be invested in him as a character beyond just it being Michael Douglas, and I didn't dislike him enough for the ending to be cathartic. So I think in retrospect, I actually think he's a problem probably with this movie overall.
Yeah, I do like his performance, I think.
Oh, he's decent. Yeah, in the film. I mean, like, yeah, Michael Douglas.
Like,
is fine.
I'm rooting for him the whole time. Like, when he's running around and, like, finding all the, you know, finding his trash, or his like, he's finding his whole house trashed, and then he's, like, getting chased by people, and he's having to, like, jump into garbage bins. Like, it's not like cathartic to watch, even if he is an asshole.
I feel like he was just kind of like, you know, he wasn't that much of an asshole, but at the same time, he was lacking in the asshole department, and also, you know, the sadness.
Asshole.
I know, right? And also, like, the sadness department. But I think he was just so, like, tepid. He was so lukewarm, so milquetoast as this sort of, like, anti-hero, and I was just kind of like, can we develop some personality?
Yeah, but I don't know that that's his fault. I agree with you that he was not...
Oh, I'm not,
like,
saying
they didn't
it's
take
his
him
fault.
In one direction or another, but I really liked his performance. I think he is very good at acting in this movie.
Sure,
but yeah,
I just
don't
think the character is...
Yeah, maybe the character, maybe the direction or the writing isn't there. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I think it's the writing. I actually think that the weakness in this movie is the script. I think the script actually here isn't that great, and it's kind of buoyed by the direction by Fincher, the performance by Douglas, and ultimately, you know, just a pretty decent Hollywood slickness that is throughout this film. But, yeah, no, I mean, as we'll get into it, I think the script definitely is the weakest part of the film. I mean, let's get into the film proper. You know, Conrad shows up, played by Sean Penn, who's very charismatic at the beginning of this movie. Quite like him a lot. But yeah, how'd you guys feel about Conrad showing up and then, you know, introducing him to CRS? Did you buy CRS at all when it first got introduced? I didn't. I was like, this is sus.
Like, the suspension of belief was there, you know, to just be like, oh, it's for rich people and it costs so much money. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of knew that it was going to go sour because I knew that it's a movie and something has to go sour
exactly.
at some point.
You can't just be like, oh, it's a fun game.
I mean, I could imagine if you're rich and you get a present, you're like, yeah, why the hell not? I might as well do it.
I wasn't sure if you were saying, like, did you buy it on the level of, like, reality, or, like, did you think it was going to go bad? So that was my fault for misunderstanding.
I kind of suspected what kind of came. Like, that they were a fake company, like, immediately. I was like, I don't know if I buy this as a real company in the movie. That's what I meant.
It made me think of, there's a scene where he's like, he's at his city club and he's talking to like a couple old guys who said that they did the game.
Yeah.
And what that reminded me of was, I think it's a Netflix show with Paul Rudd where he like plays himself, but also then like, or not himself. He plays a character, but also like the better version. Right. He gets cloned. And the whole idea behind that is like people go to this business to have like some amazing procedure done. And then they leave, but it's not really them. It's like a modified clone of them, and the real one gets buried in the woods. And Paul Rudd's character, this is all the first episode, so I'm not really spoiling anything. But it's very funny because they say, like, oh, yeah, Tom Brady goes here all the time. Yeah. And, like, all these very, very successful people. And it's kind of funny. So that's what I was kind of thinking about with this. And we'll talk about how little that makes sense when we get to the ending. But, yeah, no, it's a... Well, it's a cool premise. I also, it's also sort of made me think of Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, where there's like kind of a business that like does something interesting. I don't know.
A business that does something interesting,
isn't
it? Yeah. No spoilers.
Three people just talked at once.
They did. I was just saying, it's a real company, isn't it? Like, I don't necessarily. It's, but it's like a troupe of actors.
Because I'm assuming they changed their name. Like, they have a new front every single time they bring a new game.
Sure.
I did like seeing all their different acronyms throughout the rest of the movie. Like, they have the van with cable repair services, and then the cab company is, like, cabs something, something.
Yeah. California something. California something, yes.
California
rental. Yeah, the R is,
I was
like
certainly... I was intrigued for this entire movie. I found this to be really, really compelling. Like, I was completely into this movie. Like, at one point, I was watching my sister, and I paused it, and we're like, we didn't even say anything. Like, we wanted to grab some food, just came back down, because I was really, really into this movie. I mean, Fincher's pace is amazing. Like you said, Floyd, this is, like, a very sleek movie. This is, you know, we first get introduced to Fincher's blue tones, the blue hues. Everything feels very, like, indoor lighting, sterile. I love the look. It's awesome, and I'm really into it. But it just, I don't even have any caveats for most of this movie. It is really, really interesting up until the ending.
See, I'm actually going to disagree with you about the pacing. I get that, like, okay, part of the problem for me is the music, and this is the second week in a row that I have not been impressed with a Fincher score, and I know that it's not Howard Shore's fault. Because Howard Shore is amazing. This is the second week in a row that I've thought, like, it wasn't really anything special. And in this one, I actually think that it made me feel very tired of the whole thing very early on.
I agree.
Because there's, like, this high piano part that is, like, moving around the whole time. And it's cool. It's cool for, like, a little bit and creates a nice atmosphere. But then it goes for, like, the entire movie and that's all you get. And I just think that, made the whole movie feel a little bit monolithic. And that brings me to this point. I think this movie is too long by about an hour.
An hour?
I really felt like this dragged.
It doesn't. I mean, maybe, this movie's only 2 hours and 10 minutes.
I know. That's the thing.
I would say, like, it's about half an hour.
I just
too long.
Don't think. Maybe. Yeah. Maybe. But I think it's definitely too long, and the music didn't help. And I just don't. I know it's not Howard Shore's fault, but I think Fincher just doesn't know how to use a score, at least not yet, because I don't know. I just don't.
At this point in his career.
Yeah, I'm not sure that he has the capacity to do that yet. And I'll be very interested to see if, you know, if future movies have, you know, better scores that I think really add something, but this was not one.
It gets so good. Just you wait. But I do disagree. Okay. I do really like the score. I like the jazzy feel to it. I mean, this movie feels pretty noirish at times. I really dug it, and it was just very, very slow and dreamlike. And I felt like I was in a trance for most of this movie. I do disagree. I think this movie is the appropriate length. I love everything that happens, all the shit that goes down. He's running around and jumping around buildings. It's the same kind of feel of Seven, where we kind of descend into this underworld and we're in these garbage ridden alleys. I really do like that.
I think something that I noticed is that that I think made it seem kind of slow for me is that I'm used to there either being something visual for me to look at or something interesting happening audibly, and or both. And I think there were times in this movie where I I wasn't getting either. There was like just a regular shot of like a car driving and nothing really interesting was happening in the sound. And film is like 50% sound, 50% visuals. Like that's the David Lynch motto. So like the fact that sometimes I wasn't interested by either, I think that is what makes it drag. I also don't like, in regards to the script, I'm really excited to get to The Social Network because I know that that's Sorkin. And I'm really excited to see how Fincher deals with like a fast-paced, really dense script. So I don't know. That's kind of a side thought, but I just wasn't impressed with the pacing or the sounds in this movie.
Yeah, no, I gotta agree. I think the pacing, like I said, I think it's script problems in this film, and a lot of that comes back to probably too long of a script, you know, with too many twists and turns that just didn't, I don't think, like, thinking back on it now actually worked. As we'll get to it, I think the part that I started to lose it was probably a little over an hour into the movie where I was like, okay, is this just, you know, I kind of turned on this movie at that point around an hour in. Like I was into yeah. it when he was like going to the place and getting all these tests done. And they're like, I was like, this is super shady. They're like, yeah, exactly. Well, like, you know, it's super shady. He walks in, he's like, oh, you know, my desk or my office is somewhere around here. We're renovating. I'm like, ah, I don't buy that. You know, I was like, this all seems very sketchy, you know, what, oh man, when he's talking to the TV, that is so cool. That kind of stuff. I love that stuff. Yeah, that, you know,
the very first Twilight Zone-esque.
Yeah. The first 30 minutes of like him actually playing the game was super cool. I think the moment where it lost me was when Conrad showed back up, honestly. I don't know about you guys, but for me, the, like, everything leading up to Conrad showing back up, especially when he's walking through the house with the black light, is just amazing.
Yeah, that black light scene was really cool. Awesome.
I think that the neon house scene is really an amazing sequence. And that was when the music is actually much different there, which is why I really liked it. I really liked that sequence because it was something different. It was not just the same thing over and over again. Yeah.
Yeah, that was great. I mean, that part felt like a music video, which makes sense because David Fincher got his start making music videos. But I do agree with you, Floyd. When Conrad showed back up, I wouldn't say I lost interest in the whole movie from that point on, but just the sequences with Conrad felt a little off. I don't know. I never really jived with Sean Penn's performance in this movie.
Oh, really?
I
liked him.
Yeah, I didn't. I don't know. It just felt a little bit too much for me. I don't know. I never like could latch on to anything. I never felt grounded in anything.
What do you mean you didn't like Seymour Butts?
There's the exception right there. That classic line. And then once we get to the end and you know, we find out that Sean Penn was in it the whole time and just, I guess. But here's my question. Sean Penn is a drug addict, though, in the movie.
I think he's recovered. I think he is recovering drug addict.
Is that the thing? So he recovered and now he's,
and was like, this is a really good idea, guys.
Because it's like he made up that entire pass with CRS, you know, like that actually happened. No,
I think CRS was how he quit drugs, wasn't it? That's what I took it to, because they were like, the whole thing of CRS was like, so he got the game in London, and like this whole thing, like his whole point here was like, oh, you become such an asshole. So if he did it for himself, he's like, I need to stop going to, you know, drugs.
So what, they like made him intentionally OD or something, probably?
Maybe,
from super sadistic like that?
I think, well, honestly,
I thought that he worked for them before that, or like he was like, he worked for them in London is what they were saying.
No, he said
Let's get a prequel 23 years later with Sean Penn.
There's a very funny moment where it
actually comes across very serious when it happens, but now when you look back at it, it's funny. But when Sean Penn is in Michael Douglas's car and he opens up the glove box and all the keys are there, and he like freaks out, which he's supposed to do, I guess. But Michael Douglas isn't watching him, so he's just doing that. That's completely out of place. Yeah. He knows that the keys are going
to
be there.
He just wants to be part of it.
He's a good actor.
Yeah,
but he's acting for no one except for us.
Yeah,
which
exactly.
That's what's frustrating.
He's acting for himself.
Which is a plot
hole. We do see the waitress. I think we do see her being herself and breaking character legitimately. But it works both ways. Because when she spills the drink on the guy and she walks away and goes, asshole. Like, I feel like that, you know, that works both ways. And I feel like that probably is herself being like, wow, they told me this guy was going to be a dick, but like, wow, he's even worse than imagined. So that was a nice scene. That was a nice little breadcrumb. That was like, hey, you notice this? You can kind of, you know, see where the movie is going a bit. I like that.
Yeah.
She was like, can't wait to ship you off to Mexico.
I think it would be interesting to go back in this movie to see where, you know, where she is in on it, where she's kind of breaking character for Michael Douglas. I don't know. I don't know if she ever does. Really? But like, there are some times.
No.
Yeah, she's a very good actress. She's a professional.
She is. Yeah, there are so many layers. But I think the main thing is I just don't care. Yeah. I don't care if she was acting for part of it. Yeah, I don't
either. Christine was a major weak spot for me in this movie.
See, I really liked her. See, I got to I barely have any flaws with 90% of this movie. I really like it. I think the pacing is awesome. Like, I'm in this. I'm so in it. But it just completely falls apart.
It threw me off that she was as major of a part as she was. But, like, I think, you know, eventually they did bring it around. Kind of having her be, like, this love interest for him, I guess, which was a little weird.
Yeah, it didn't work.
But then I thought it was cool how, like, you know, she was, like, playing both sides and, like, was a double agent.
See, I don't think she was. I don't think she was.
But she wasn't, part of the because game. The whole thing is orchestrated. But yeah. It was all part of the game. But I think but that was she a never cool breaks part character, of the game.
If she never breaks character during the whole thing, then that taxi, the scene where she's, like, sitting in the taxi and he's, like, asking her on a date, like, after it's all over. That's totally unearned then. She was just an actress doing her job.
Exactly.
That doesn't make any sense.
Yes, yeah. I agree.
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was my point, Logan. Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't work. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Okay, so
we agree.
So with Christine, like, the reason why I don't think it works with Christine is, like, she again, I think all the performances in this movie are pretty good. I don't blame any of this on the actress. I think it's just weakness in the script writing, because looking back on it, so much of this movie feels manufactured for the audience, which is something that you never want in a film. You never want the audience to be able to retrospectively look back at your film and be like, oh, that was just for me. That wasn't actually part of the plot or, you know, like anything that was important. And that's the kind of weakness that I feel like this film has. Thinking back on it now, and I feel like as we're going through this conversation, I'm getting more negative, and I think that's right for me. I think I'm starting to sour on this movie a little bit as we talk about it, because so much of it just felt unnecessary. Besides, like, okay, so like the Christine stuff I liked, in terms of like when they were like kind of like Mr. and Mrs. Smithing it, when they were like running around and she was like, that was $1,000 shoe, and he was like, that one was awesome. Yeah, like that kind of stuff, that was fun. And then you realize later that like all of this was manufactured. But like, I feel like I was very conflicted on what I wanted this movie to be while it was happening, because like I said, the first half an hour of him actually playing the game, so like the first 45 minutes of the movie, I was digging it. Even if I wasn't fully invested with the character, I was like, okay, this is an interesting enough concept that I'll go with it. And some of the scenes that were happening, like, okay, this is really cool. But then Conrad shows up and I was like, okay. And I never really bought that this was actually a game happening. I knew that someone, I thought it was going to be like murder related, like they would accidentally frame or like intentionally like frame him for murder or something like that. I never bought that it was just a game. And like looking back on it, like even though it was the cliche
and sex.
Yeah, like even though it was the cliche thing to do, like to not have it be like the real thing, it kind of, the whole movie feels so much lesser, especially like the way they end it, having it like, oh yeah, it was just a game the entire time and everyone was just acting, and you know, it means nothing it means nothing if you weren't invested with Michael Douglas in the first place.
Yeah, I was thinking when it gets closer to the end and they're like, oh, they just wanted your money, like they wanted to take your money, so they drained your bank accounts and did all of this, like if it was all just going to be about money, I was going to think that that was so lame, and then it turns out to be so much lamer than that. But Floyd, I wanted to touch on something you said about that I think is really true with psychological thrillers, which I would categorize this as from
absolutely.
A movie.
Yeah, I think so.
It's important that there's nothing that's done just for us. You know, it has to, like, if the director is going to extra lengths to convince us that something is the case, then that's not a good, you know, that is not a well done psychological thriller. Something that does this really well is I just watched the film Images by Robert Altman. Really interesting watch, and it totally like plays into that. Like when you're like, what the main character is seeing is what you're seeing, and she's confused and you're confused, and it all is sort of like together in that way. And with this, yeah, I definitely felt that a lot of the things were done just for us. And then absolutely when you get to this ending, the entire rest of the movie is so cheapened. Like, I'm waiting to get there because I want to talk.
It's so hard to talk about this movie without talking about the ending.
So, yeah, because I feel like when you get to the ending, the whole the rest of the thing means nothing.
Basically. Yeah, it gets goofy. I do have a question. So, what do you mean, like when you say that, what specific scenes do you mean, like that are played only for us? Because for me, I felt like we were really just along with Michael Douglas the whole time. What he saw, I was confused by, because we never really get like a behind the scenes peek and like reveal that this is actually a game. We get hints at it, but I didn't. You know, it was only until the end that the big reveal came.
I guess it was that maybe Floyd. Maybe you have more examples of this, but I guess for me, it was just the Sean Penn thing. Where he has that reaction where it's just him by himself. He's not doing it for Michael Douglas's character. He's just doing it for us. I'm sure there are other examples of that, but that's just the one that really stuck in my mind.
That's the one that sticks out in my mind. I'm sure if you go back and watch the movie, there will be little moments that you're like, that wouldn't happen. That wouldn't need to happen. But like, just one viewing off the top of my head, that is a big one. I mean, there has to be other things like with the one thing that's never explained then too is like, what was happening with the dude that he was like screwing out of the company? Because he was just like, "Oh yeah, I'm happy." Did he actually just end up just being happy with getting forced out of the company?
Because he wasn't part of the game.
No, I don't think he was.
Yeah, well, and the thing is, like, the catharsis doesn't work because it's not like Michael Douglas made a good decision.
He didn't actually screw anyone over.
He tried to screw this man over, and only as a result of the game, like some unintentional, you know, consequence, I guess. This guy's happy now for some reason. It doesn't make any sense.
He was just like, you also, know what, you're right, I should have retired.
Also, just, it makes so little sense when you think about the massive amount that you would have to pay everyone involved.
Oh my god.
Like, and they have a little joke about it. Where did Conrad get this money from? The bill is huge and they have to split the bill, but like, Jesus, there's so many people that they have to convince to play along with this. Like, there are so many people. And that's the, like, just this horse bill sized contrivance that I just cannot swallow.
Here's a question.
When it comes to this movie.
Was Sutherland, I think it was his name, the lawyer, was the lawyer in on it?
No.
See, yeah. I don't
they
know.
He wasn't.
Really?
Well, she said that he was, and then at the party at the end, he's like, I don't know what this is.
I thought at the party at the end, he was being sarcastic.
Everyone who's at the party is in on it because they didn't tell him about it. You know?
Well, I think they just invited some of the people, like his friend that he screwed over, and
they knew that the big like pillow in the middle was gonna catch him when he falls through the roof to his supposed death.
And there was
death.
Like metal poles there. Like if he didn't jump right, he could have just snapped on one of those metal poles.
Yeah, we'll get to that. There are so many ways that could have just gone absolutely wrong.
Yeah,
could
have straight up died.
And how do you? Oh my god, how do you?
Let's
just
get
okay,
to the ending.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, so much of this movie is just dependent on the ending. Before we get to the ending, is there any specific sequence that you guys want to talk about that you thought is valid of discussion away from the ending?
I thought the you know, being buried alive sequence was kind of interesting.
That was
to see
cool.
Like how he gives up his watch that his mother gave him that belonged to his father. To get back home, and it's kind of this way, like knowing that it is still part of the game, like it is this symbolic, like him like shaking off those like chains of things that were holding him back in his life and making him like this you know, this kind of terrible sad person.
I do like
him moving on with his life.
That's an amazing scene, and I like everything before the ending. I think the visuals here are amazing. There's a great shot of him like holding up the gun to the girl's head in the elevator. I think the cinematography is beautiful when he's in the car,
like
when he falls into the
movie,
river with the
it?
Golden Gate Bridge behind him, like total Vertigo reference. Beautiful.
I love how this movie looked. I had that in my notes that a lot of this movie felt like Vertigo.
Well, it feels very Hitchcock. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, definitely. There's this one part where he is at the very beginning of the movie, he was coming down the stairs. And there's this one shot of him that he's like coming down the stairs and he's like going to work or something. And he's like being grumpy. And then at the very end, it's when he comes back from Mexico and he's like slowly like walking up the stairs, a completely new person. I thought was this really cool imagery from like, you know, the two times we see that shot in this movie, how different it is.
Yeah, you know what? I thought of a couple things that I actually want to bring up before we get to the ending. One is, like, at a certain point, I think when he realized that the apartment was fake, I was like, I don't care anymore. Like, I don't care what it completely lost me at that point. Once Christine was flipping and flopping so many times, I was just like, you know what? I don't care. I just Triple don't care. Agent. I want this movie to be over. I don't care what this ends up being. I knew I have it in my notes so many times after that scene with Conrad, I'm like, okay, he's in on whatever this is. Like, whatever's actually going on, it's definitely headed by Conrad. And I mean, I was right on that.
Well, I feel like the movie knows that. Like, the movie knows that.
I feel like it's just bad writing.
You will suspect that. And that's why I love that they play with it then, because then you have the, what is it, Christine? Kristen?
Christine, I think, yeah.
Christine.
Because the Christine character flip-flopping, and you're not sure, okay, is this person trying to get out of the game that Conrad made? But no, she's just in the game, and then she drugs him. I found this to be really cool. A question I do have, though, is if they were shooting blanks, how were the holes going through the wall?
Yeah, how are they going into his car?
There you go. There's more plot holes with, yeah,
it doesn't
things
make sense.
That are only there for us. There you go. You caught another thing that's there just for us. I thought that, like, when it was shooting at the wall and there was holes in the wall all of a sudden, I was like, okay, he definitely would have gotten shot if they just blew that wall to shit with bullets, and he would just like, oh my god, get my head down. Like, yeah. There's something else that was just for the audience.
Did they, like, fuck up his car beforehand so that they were like, oh, look, there's bullets in your car?
And, like,
right, like, when some people get shot, they're like, oh, it was just, like, squibs or whatever, but, like,
would you can do that?
When it's, like, his car.
Yeah, I was going to say, you can do that on a person, but I don't know how you squib a wall that's, like, a pre-existing wall.
Yeah, and I can't even, like, I don't even know, like, how you would do that with movie magic, because the whole thing is, like, it's a game, it's a movie set, like, these are all props, but, like, it's his car, unless you installed it before with really super weak glass that you, like, cap or something.
I was going to say, you just go into the car, like, open up the door and put, like, fake squibs or whatever the equivalent would be to, like,
yeah,
going to a car.
But the thing is, it's intriguing, and I liked it. I was on the edge of my seat. It's just the end, like, what?
I have in my notes.
It doesn't ruin it for me. It just devalues it.
I was like, at one point, I was like, I like this, but it feels like there's a ton of cliches. I'm like, eh, it's kind of rocky. And then I think it was at the Sean Penn scene where I have it in my notes, where I was like, I'm starting to feel more, eh, it's going to be all Sean Penn. It's just scammers. Even if it is Sean Penn scamming, I'll still be disappointed. And then my next note was, this movie lost me. I'm out. Like the ending kind of makes me feel, like, more questioning on, like, how I feel about the movie. But now that we're talking about it, I'm remembering that, like, I really didn't like, the 45 minutes leading up to the ending. That just, it didn't work for me. Like I said, everything with Christine flipping and flopping, I was like, I don't care. This movie just feels like a giant cliche. Like, of course it was a scam. Which I guess in retrospect, maybe you're supposed to feel that, but then the ending didn't land. Like, the ending didn't land, so the whole rest of it felt cheapened by that then. So, I don't know. I mean, Logan, you're nodding in approval.
Yeah, definitely. No, I agree, because now you've admitted that, because you were saying 30 minutes too long before, and now you're saying maybe 45 lost you, so, and I was saying an hour. So,
but that wasn't pacing. That wasn't my problems with pacing. It was like, okay, this movie's lost me at this point.
Content.
Yeah. A scene I like that I want to give credit to is the scene at the zoo with the tigers in the back.
Great scene.
I think that's very cool.
Oh, yeah, that was neat.
Confronts the actor. I think that's a neat one with his kids there, and it kind of shows that, like, I feel like that's kind of like the crack in the armor. Like, this is where you see, like, they can't completely pay off everyone to completely commit to this. Like, he still has an, like, this actor has an outside life, you know?
Yeah.
And, like,
well,
like, what if he would have, like, seen that guy on the street? Like, you can't completely, you know, keep everyone involved as an absolute secret.
You don't think that was planned as part of the game? Because he goes to the cafe, the New Moon Cafe, which the guy intentionally eats the food, mentions the New Moon Cafe. He goes there. The worker at the New Moon Cafe tells him where to go, to the zoo. He sees the ad on television that was intentionally placed there. I assumed his kids were actors.
Was his wife in on it?
She
goes,
yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Because totally, she gives him the car, which seemed like way too easy. Like, why are you giving him his car?
I was like, why would you do that?
This is so complicated. There's no
way.
It's complicated, but it also devalues everything.
Exactly. It's so complicated that it devalues it.
It's just,
let's just get to it.
It's all
really... Let's just get to it. I was feeling like this is really tense. This is ramping up to be a great ending when they were on the rooftop.
I agree.
Yeah, no, the whole sequence of him going through, like, the mess hall and stuff with the gun, that was really cool.
And just, like, really cool. Mowing down people while the guards are, like, putting bullets through everyone.
That was suspenseful.
Actually,
really
something
cool.
I wanted to talk about before that I didn't mention, but in the scene where he and Christine are sort of, like, running around together, there's, like, he gets really dirty. Like, there's this trope where, like, action heroes, you know, FBI agents, whatever, they, like, always wear suits, and they always look completely immaculate in every shot. Like, everything is guilty of it. Like, Twin Peaks is guilty of this. Like, X-Files does it. Like, it's just, it's such a thing
it's
at
a
this
trope.
Point. And I love that he doesn't just get, like, a normal amount of dirt on him like he would normally. Like, he gets exceptionally messy.
Yeah.
He gets so much shit spilled on him.
He jumps into
like,
a dumpster.
The ink explodes and the pen in his pocket. Like, it's, he just is so much of a mess by the end of that sequence. And so that feeds into this mess hall sequence where, you know, we see him go from like a very, you know, high class businessman to basically like, I was getting like school shooter vibes or like, like he just walks into this cafeteria and he's like, he just has a gun and he's ready to kill people. Like, it is so insane how we see his progression, which is why I think he is a decent actor, but the script around him and the themes revolving like around wealth and privilege, I don't think those land, but I think the performance isolated is pretty good.
The whole message by the end of the movie about rich people is sus again.
It's so like, fucked up at the end because like he loses all his money, right? But then he doesn't.
Loses all his money, yeah.
He still has it.
Yeah, he still has all of it, and not only does he have it, he needs it. He pays for his own birthday party. And at the end, it's like, it's passed off as a joke, like, oh, he and his brother still are super rich and still afford this.
I'd be, ugh.
Like, ah, what the heck? It's just such a stain on the whole thing. Like, they were setting up, from the beginning, from that, you know, that whole movie flashback sequence, like, they were setting up these ideas of privilege and maybe he's going to have this all stripped away from him. And then he does, and it's kind of effective. And then he just gets it all right back, and it's not effective anymore.
Like,
and then they just play all the money that stuff for a joke.
I guess it's like we taught him a lesson. Now he can learn to use it.
He
wisely.
Wanted to die. He jumped through
it's
a roof
stupid.
To kill himself.
Yeah, and it's really sick. I mean, they emotionally manipulated this guy into the point where he tried to kill himself. I mean,
how would
they
know
it,
also like exactly
absurd.
Where on that building he was going to jump off of?
Well. They also, did you hear the actor guy said, if you didn't jump, I would have had to throw you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like,
and
what
your
the
life
fuck?
Would have been on my hands.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so a big
I
risk.
Mean, what a shitty ass fucking birthday gift.
Yeah.
Like,
oh
why
my God.
Why is he happy about this by the end? Why is anyone happy about this?
Like
I
oh,
would
you
be
drove
relieved.
Me to suicide.
Right, I would be, like, relieved that that was all fake, sure. But why were the people in the, like, in his country club so grateful that they had played the game and they were like, oh, it's a great experience. You have to do it.
Does
like,
it drive
okay, maybe they were
suicide?
Actors and that was just
well,
fake.
They were actors. They were in the...
Yeah, but, like, what the heck? Why is he, like, happy about this at the end? I would have been like, you guys are all dicks. You didn't tell me about this? Like, how much did they pay you to keep this secret?
What the
like,
hell? I was it's mentally a... prepared to kill myself. Like...
He killed himself!
Yeah, he killed himself.
He literally did.
Yeah, they don't give, like, the character time to process things. He lands, he hits the mat, and then he goes and hugs his brother, and it's happy and we're dancing.
And not only do they, it's the rest of the psychological torture, they don't even let him kill himself. He wanted to die, and they didn't let him.
You know what I think, at the point of the movie that I would have been like, okay, you know what, everything feels right to teach this kind of lesson. If it was actually... that this was actually all a game set up by Conrad, and then he actually had this gun and actually killed his brother. Like,
yes.
That would have been, I think, the point where I was like, okay, I feel like we got something out of this, you know? And then when he jumps, I was like, okay, that's amazing imagery. Like, Fincher just absolutely nailed
beautiful.
The imagery of that, of him falling. I think that's the poster on Criterion.
Typical ending, I think. Just the fact that, like, they had to wrap everything up in this neat little bow. And I think that was part of the reason that we got to this point where it was like, well, no, his brother can't really be dead, and he doesn't really kill himself. And look, they're in the country club where he eats dinner sometimes, and everyone's there, including the guy that he fucked over. Like, it all had to be packaged up.
There was
and
no
then,
consequences
like, oh,
for anything.
Yes, exactly.
That's, which means that's the whole movie is stupid now.
Yeah.
See,
yeah.
Okay, here's a question I don't know the answer to. We talked a little bit about in Seven how there was something at, and I won't spoil it in case anyone hasn't seen it, but right at the end there was something added in that gives the ending a little bit more of a hopeful note that Fincher didn't want, the studio wanted. Do you guys know if this was Fincher, if this was the studio or what? Or like,
yeah, so he was actually the one who pushed for this ending, this cathartic ending. And in an interview, he said he regrets it and that he doesn't think that the third act works well at all, and that he thought that he could just keep the pace moving, keep ratcheting up the tension. But he admitted that he didn't think it worked, and that even like his wife, who was a producer on the movie, told him not to do it, which is funny. But I also actually want to correct something I said in the Seven podcast, because I said that he wanted to end the movie right, like without the quote, but he actually wanted to end the movie with Brad Pitt shooting Kevin Spacey, then cut it right there. Spoilers. Without any like any emotional. I think that would have worked better. I think that would have worked better than having Morgan Freeman say he's going to stay on the police force, because I still don't think that works. I think for that dark of a movie, you needed to be like severely dark, which is why
there would be no character arc if that was the ending. You know what I'm saying?
I would have liked it. It's super dark.
You wouldn't have liked having no character arc in a movie? Really?
I think it would have been so ballsy. I think it would have been a ballsy.
No, it's not ballsy. Whatever. We're not talking about that. It's just lazy.
But with this movie, it's why when Michael Douglas was falling to the ground, I was like, oh, it's going to end here, I'm assuming, right? This is going to be dark. But then, as I spoke about before, the disconnect. I was waiting for another twist to come.
Exactly,
me
too.
When he gets off the mat and he begins to hug Sean Penn, I was like, no, this can't. I was like, I'm not feeling anything of what is being portrayed on screen. What it felt like, I won't spoil the scene because I know Brittany and Logan haven't seen it. But Floyd, it felt like the Gone Girl scene.
I'll take
the scene, the you bitch, that scene, if you know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. Yes.
Like that's what it felt like. That sort of disconnect, right? Because with what's going on screen
what
you were
saying,
and what the
characters when someone
are...
whispers that into someone's ear. Yeah.
Yes, yes. That's what it felt like. And I just could not believe that Fincher actually wanted me to feel this.
I agree. Yeah, it just it
here's
doesn't...
a theory.
Go ahead.
I have a theory that I think it puts the ending in a better context if there were any hint of this at all. But everything after he falls and he gets up goes exactly according to plan.
It's heaven.
I think that this is a figment of his imagination as he's falling, because everything after he falls and after he gets up, everything is perfect. And I think the image that might get close to selling me on it is seeing Sean Penn with the blood stain in the same place. Because I feel like we saw blood. I feel like
it was a squib.
When Sean Penn was dead, this is another thing. It's not just a squib, because I feel like we see like his innards. I don't know. Maybe
His flesh at some point.
They touch his flesh.
Like bloody.
Right.
Yeah.
that's fake no squib.
It makes no sense.
So I was thinking, I think I like this movie better if the ending sequence is a figment of his imagination. Because, you know, there's documentation for there's psychological research about how, you know, sometimes when people die, they're like these flashes of neural activity when they die, and they, you know, they're conjuring up some images. And I think that
Tree of Life
could be what this is. That's what I want to believe that this is, and that he actually killed himself, and this is like some weird fantasy where like he gets to believe at the end that not everything was real.
Yeah, I agree.
Oh, it's absolutely a stretch. I'm just trying to give Fincher any credit I can right
now. I don't think that was the intention in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, and I'm definitely not going to grade this movie with that as, you know, the intention, even though that's like kind of my headcanon. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's something to salvage it. If you ever watch it again, you can think of it that way.
Even the ending, right? It ends on this sort of, not ambiguous, but like I guess a sort of cliffhanger. Like, is he going to go with the girl? Is he going to go back inside? But he goes with the girl. He has coffee. She leaves for Australia and does her game thing. And besides, she's an actor and doesn't
then
really.
Then he becomes an actor.
And like she doesn't seem like there's any real spark there when she's actually being herself.
Not.
Or he goes back inside to his rich person country club and is still rich and
continues
is
to be a rich
fine.
And again,
now?
They don't grapple with the fact that he fucking killed himself and he was just like, you know what? You're right. I was an asshole. Sean Penn was like, I had to do something. You were becoming such an asshole. And Sean Penn or and Michael Douglas was like, You're right, brother.
Thanks for driving me to suicide.
Yeah, like,
no, this is when I was talking about this
ending.
When I was talking about that before, I literally, sometimes when I talk about a movie and I get angry enough, this happened with Cats, I just get so overheated and I need to take my shirt off. I have my shirt off right now because yeah, I just got so annoyed talking about how that entirely erases any stakes and also is not how anyone would react to that specific thing happening.
Again, bad script writing.
I don't get it, but here's the thing. For some reason, this ending does not, like, ruin the rest of the movie for me.
Oh, it absolutely
does. I still love the rest of this movie. And this ending, it didn't anger me. It just like, confused me. And in some sort of weird way, made me more interested in the movie. I don't know how to describe it. But for some reason, it thrust me further into the movie, if you know what I mean.
No, it completely pulled me out. I don't know what you mean. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I don't know why. Like, this is, the other movie, an example, right? I don't know if any of you guys have seen the movie Green Room.
Yes.
With, you have?
Yes.
All right, I love that movie to death, but whenever I watch it, it just baffles me, because I don't understand the plot. I think it's all muddled. I think it's all over the place. I don't think the ending works. But I am always drawn back to that movie, and I've seen it, like, 5 times, because I think it's the dream, like, I love that movie to death. Something about that tone and the dream aspect of it, it's the same thing here. The ending I don't think works. It baffles me, but I don't know why. I've been thinking about this movie ever since.
Really? I kind of stopped thinking about it. I was like, I knew we were going to have this conversation. I could hash out how I actually felt about this movie. And after that, like, with knowing that, I'm like, all right, you know what? I'm good. I'll figure it out then. This movie, it's not sticking with me.
Yeah.
And again, I didn't really think going in this movie that I would be as negative as I am. Just like, the movie, like, the ending threw me off so much that, like, I literally forgot that I was, like, until I was looking back at my notes just now while we were talking and talking through this movie, I was like, oh, yeah, I really didn't like about 45 minutes of this movie. The ending is just that perplexing that it made me forget that I disliked part of the movie, but now going through it, disliking that much of the movie, and then the ending being that undercutting, I'm like, wow, this is just a really badly written movie. And to kind of prove that to you, it's like, this was written by the same guys who wrote Terminator 3. So,
oof.
Yeah, you know.
Well, and it's weird because even when the credits are rolling, they play like this eerie...
Yeah, it feels like it's going to be another twist.
And I was like, okay, I had to have missed something. I had to admit, like, there was a twist in there. Fincher knew something about this ending that I didn't. You know what I mean? But there isn't.
There's nothing. It's just a happy ending.
Yep, and I think it is very devaluing to the rest of the movie.
Yeah. I mean,
this is kind of a short one, but I feel like we kind of covered it.
Yeah, this is a short one for us, but it kind of feels like a nice little vacation from our 2-hour almost Cats podcast. So, guys, final thoughts and ratings on The Game.
What to say about this movie? I don't know. I mean, if you don't think about it too much, it's a good movie. But if you start considering the consequences of the ending, the entire movie is devalued. As much as I liked, you know, the party at the end, and I was like, oh, this is a happy scene. And, like, look at that. He's like, he's talking to the girl who was a triple agent. But at the end
really
of the day...
But really just a single agent.
Yeah, exactly. At the end of the day, I mean, you go back and you think about every single scene and you're like, okay, well, you know, that was all planned and it didn't matter. And they didn't address any of, like, the important things at the end, you know, namely, like, driving him to suicide. I think it's a weird commentary on, like, rich people and, like, how money can't buy happiness. But then they used money to buy happiness.
I was gonna say, are we sure that's the...
It's not. It's like supposed to be, but it's not. And it's just, it's very confusing. And honestly, like, when I started this, I was like, you know what? That was like, I still enjoyed watching that movie. I'm going to give it a B+. But now I don't know. I'm so torn. I think I'm going to go with a B-, just because that feels right for me.
Yeah, I mean, at the beginning of this podcast, I said that I don't know how to rate this movie. And I still don't know how to rate this movie. I'm not... I think I feel a little bit clearer on it. I know what I dislike, the ending. I know what I like, the rest of the movie. But it's tough for me to reconcile those two, because I do think the ending is completely botched. I think this sort of Christmas Carol, Scrooge redemption type parable he's going for doesn't work at all. Maybe it was, you know, amplified by just some of my expectations going in, knowing that Fincher's movies are always very dark, very nihilistic, and this one really went the opposite direction. But I think it ends on a real sour note. But as I said, this doesn't ruin the rest of the movie for me. I don't know why, but I just really find myself intrigued by this movie. I think the imagery, I think the visuals are beautiful. I really do think this is Fincher at his best in terms of behind the camera, crafting visuals. This is really, the start of this sleek style that we see. You know, Seven had a lot, it just felt a lot more noirish. This feels very blue and very cold, and I really like that look of his movies, and we get that kind of moving forward for most things. I think Michael Douglas is good. I talked about how Sean Penn, that performance just didn't really jive with me. But other than him, I do think the performances in this movie are very good. One person I forgot to mention was the actor who plays the actor in the film, the CRS kind of head of everything. I thought that he was very, very lovely. I thought he was really good. I think I've seen him in something I can't quite remember. But I don't know, something about the dreamlike tone that this movie establishes. One shot that I can think of specifically is when he's playing racquetball alone in his house. And the shots are kind of melding and fading into each other and kind of overlapping. I thought it was beautiful, and I just could not take my eyes off the screen. This sort of like Xanadu home that he had when he was, the sound effects when he was putting the wine bottle on the cart, and it rattled everywhere and it echoed everywhere. I thought it was enthralling. But I do admit, I mean, I think the ending does devalue it, but you know, I still find myself very, very intrigued by this movie. So I think I'm going to go B on this one, because I cannot overlook the ending and how botched that is. And, you know, even Fincher himself admitted it. But I really, really enjoyed the rest of this movie, and I definitely something that I can see myself returning to.
I think that this is a cool idea and it has a good atmosphere, but it's too long. And the ending should have been darker, and that devalues it. Now, this brings me to my final thought. I think that this would be a fantastic episode of Black Mirror.
Yeah.
They can keep the amazing idea. All of those episodes just have fantastic ideas. They keep the atmosphere. All the episodes have a really interesting, like, kind of creepy atmosphere where you feel like, you know, something's wrong, you're being watched or something like that. But they can cut it down to an hour. You don't especially have to care about the characters. You sometimes do in Black Mirror, but it's not necessary. And they can make the ending darker. They can make the ending as dark as they want. And I think that's the format that this premise needs, because it's a really cool premise. I mean, I just really like it. But yeah, Matt, you were saying how the ending didn't ruin the rest of the movie for you, and I think it definitely did for me. It instantly devalues everything else. And it's a movie that, you know, for the rest of it, I thought was fine. I didn't especially like anything in it, but I think the pacing drags, as I've said many times. And I do think it's technically appealing. I like Douglas's performance. I like some of the sequences, especially the neon house, obviously a great, great moment. But I'm going C+ for this one. This is lower than I expected, but I think it deserves a fresh rating. I think it's worth the watch for the atmosphere, but maybe just cut it off. Maybe just stop watching as he's falling. You know, I think that might be
as soon as he hits the glass, turn it off.
Yeah.
Yep. Turn it off. Then that's the end of the movie. Then he's just killed his brother and committed suicide on his 48th birthday. Just like super his dad dark. Did. Like what? Yeah. Yeah. I think that's the ending that deserves, but yep, I'm going C+ for this one.
Yeah. And there would still be character arc with Michael yep. Douglas and some satisfying conclusion, unlike if Seven ended that way. but yeah, no, I don't know. Talking through this movie, I anticipated actually being positive on this movie, but talking through it, I just kind of realized I don't really like this movie, unfortunately, because there are, like I said, there are aspects of it that I definitely like. I love all the performances. I think Sean Penn and Michael Douglas are both really good. I think the directing style of the movie is good by Fincher, but a lot of it feels like production design wise feels just like a slick generic 90s Hollywood thriller, And I feel like so much of this felt like a studio picture to me that it just kind of turns me off in the end. Like, it just turned me off the movie where I'm like, eh, you know what? I just, you know, eh, it just, eh, it didn't work for me. The ending completely undermined it. The last 45 minutes until he found the actor at the zoo didn't really work for me. I mean, maybe small moments like him walking into the restaurant and having to, like, beg for a ride for $18 to San Francisco was kind of a point where I'm like, okay, I get what this is saying. You know, it's, like, humiliating a rich person, which, you know, we've seen a million times at this point. I just think ultimately that the script doesn't work here. And yeah, I don't know. Just so much of this movie looking back on it just doesn't work for me. And it's not as bad as Alien 3 for me. But so far, I think Fincher is 1 for 3 for me in terms of his first three movies. So I don't know. I thought going into it, like, Logan, we had that, we have that scale that we're going into a podcast. I was like between B minus and B plus probably for this movie going in. Honestly, after talking about it, I'll go with a C. I'll give it that, I guess, because it's well directed and it's well acted. But I can't really give it many compliments other than that. Other than the first 30 minutes that I thought were very thrilling, and well put together. Especially, like, I think my favorite scene in the movie has to be him talking to the TV and the way it cut in and out. That was just awesome. But yeah, no, I'm gonna give this movie a C. It doesn't work for me. If you guys have followed us for any time, you know that our cutoff line for rotten or fresh is C is rotten, C plus is fresh. I definitely think this is a rotten movie for me. So, yeah, Fincher 1 for 3 for me, honestly, in terms of his first three movies. He's a fantastic director, and I'm so excited to talk about his other movies. I mean, Seven was an A plus for me. So, like, it's still, you know, he still made a fantastic movie in between a couple bad ones. But yeah, I'm interested to see what you guys think about our next couple movies.
What if you discover that you just secretly hate David Fincher?
I know I don't, because I gave Seven an A+, and I know I'm going to give out at least one other A+ in this series, so. But yeah, no, I mean, I at least really like David Fincher, and I'm very excited to talk about Fight Club next week. I believe I'm the only person who has seen Fight Club, right?
That sounds right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of crazy, because it's such a cultural film that I thought that even one of you guys would have seen it.
Yeah, no.
I've been meaning to. Okay, by me.
Here's a question, yes, I have going into Fight Club. Maybe. Even though you guys haven't seen the movie, do you know anything about the movie? Because it is a movie that has a lot of clout in culture.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know the ending, yeah.
Okay.
Kind of a bummer, but I don't know, like, super specifics, but, like, I've seen that last shot. I've seen the last 5 seconds.
Okay.
Like, it's just famous.
Okay, yeah. I don't know if the last shot really, if you're talking about what I think you're talking about, I don't think that really ruins the rest of the movie, but
I do also know some other parts of it.
Okay, there is one thing in the movie that I think might, but the last shot I don't think spoils anything, really. But, I mean, I think we're going to have another fun conversation. I think this movie, Fight Club and Seven feel very similar, and you can definitely tell that they're both made by David Fincher. But yeah, so Fight Club is a massive movie in the lexicon. It was a huge deal at the time, and I'm very excited to talk about it next week. But guys, before then, we have so many other podcasts on the network. You guys want to tell the audience about them?
Yes, I would love to. So, of course, we have this show, but did you know that we also have the Cinema Talk Movie Journal, which is Matt and Ryan's miscellaneous short-form movie podcast featuring the best of lists? Part 1, Best of the Decade, just came out, finally, after like 6 months.
So it's coming.
Jeez. So it's coming. Of course, we have Stop, Wait, What, which is our improv comedy advice show. Back in Style, our newcomer-friendly episodic review of Twin Peaks. Twisted Mug Mysteries, your one-stop shop for everything spooky and occult. Octo Island, our extended universe Star Wars podcast series. We need to change the wording of that.
We do.
I Might Play That and I Might Play That, which is our video game review podcast.
Yes, and you know the drill. We are also on social media. We are at Twisted Mug Media on Instagram and Twitter. Please hit us up on those platforms. If you do occupy the gram or Twitter, give us a follow. Give us a like. Give us a comment. That'd be appreciated. And yeah, if you want to contact us, if you like this episode, if you like Fincher movies, if you hate this movie, DM us on those platforms or email us at twistedmugmedia@gmail.com. And as always, if you do feel so inclined, leave us a 5-star rating. Tell us about, recommend this podcast to your friends.
There you go.
Yes.
Tell us about this podcast.
Tell us about this podcast.
About ourselves.
Tell us about yourself.
I have something interesting that I am doing right now. I wanted to plug my Letterboxd account, Logan Emmert. You can find me there. You can actually find all of us there now, so we can give our individual plugs later, as well as we are going to have, actually we do have right now, a Cinema Talk podcast combined Letterboxd for all the movies that we review on here. So that's very exciting. Look forward to that. But on my own right now, and this is coming out on Monday the 10th, so I should probably have this list public, but I'm starting a list of John Williams movies that are movies scored by John Williams. I know Floyd has been going through, you know, film history by looking at different directors, and I'm choosing to do that by looking at different composers. And so I've seen The Cowboys, Images, and Jaws so far, and I'll be working my way through a lot of other ones. I'm really excited, and I'll be doing a list. And, you know, if you want some kind of basic explanations of why I like certain scores, why I don't like other scores, you know, you can check out my Letterboxd, Logan Emmert, and check out that list that I'm doing. And yeah, nice. Guys, if you want to plug yours too.
I think mine is
Matt Monroy, MattMonroy.
Yeah, mine is Ryan Floyd. And yeah, right now I'm actually taking, I'm kind of at a weird stasis point about what you were talking about, Logan. So I've been watching, the past couple days, I've been watching a couple Criterions that I blind bought, which I will be doing a video on our YouTube channel. We didn't plug that, but that's Twisted Mug Media Company right now. Awesome, awesome, awesome. Yes, great.
It's Twisted Mug Media Network. But yeah, Matt, so you can, it, right?
I will be doing a video in the next couple days talking about the last couple Criterions that I got before the sale ended. So I've been watching a couple Criterion movies, and then I actually had about a week there where I was moving that I didn't watch a movie at all. But I have Inland Empire. I'm going to watch Inland Empire and finish my David Lynch. And then I think I'm moving on to Billy Wilder, who was a classic filmmaker from the 40s, 50s, and 60s, made movies like Double Indemnity, The Apartment. I watched Sunset Boulevard for the first time, so I kind of started already with him a little bit. So, you know, go follow me on Letterboxd. I feel like ever since quarantine started, I feel like I've actually diversified the movies that I'm watching. So I'm pretty happy with the film consumption I'm doing right now. So go give me a follow. Tell me some recommendations of films that you love that you think I should watch in my free time. So, yeah. I think that's about it, guys. Come back next week for Fight Club, where we will break the number one rule, and we're going to talk about Fight Club. So, I'm Ryan.
I'm Brendan.
I'm Matthew.
And I'm Logan.
Thanks for listening, guys. See you next week.
See ya.
Solid.
Jesus.
Oh,
suck
yeah.
These nuts.
Burpee, fellas.
Solid as my cock.
Giant penis.